This system of free speech, this system which allows every citizen to express his opinion, is a system which makes, which gives dissent orderly expression. It contributes to the security of the state because it provides the indispensable basis for achieving unity through the resolution of conflict and of differences of opinion. It has a very useful, freedom of speech has a very useful influence in another way. It provides, of course, for the criticism of official action, which is necessary to keep officials on their toes, which is necessary to keep official action responsive to the thoughts and the desires and the ideas and the needs of ordinary people. It provides the kind of challenge to government which is indispensable to efficient government. The idea that totalitarian governments are more efficient than democratic governments is really, I think, a very silly myth. And you couldn't have had a better illustration of it than in the inefficiency which characterized the vaunted German Reich, which you remember Hitler said was to be a 1,000-year Reich, but lasted for a little more than a decade. There, the mistakes that were made by the dictator were made without challenge, and therefore without any system by which they could be corrected. Of course, the democracies, the free countries, made terrible mistakes in the prosecution of the war, too. But those mistakes were subject to criticism from a more or less alert press, from citizens who had ideas of their own about how things ought to be done. And through that criticism, eventually the mistakes were corrected, and we found better and more efficient ways of dealing with our needs and our problems. Free speech is not simply a luxury to be enjoyed by the individuals who like to sound off. It is a mechanism for keeping government efficient, for keeping government on its toes, for achieving the only kind of national unity which has any meaning or any endurance. This is a country which works more largely by unofficial political mechanisms than by its official political mechanisms. And I suppose that the most important instruments for political action in the United States are not so much the major political parties as the groups and organizations, the voluntary associations that are formed by Americans, sometimes for transient purposes, sometimes for business and economic interests, sometimes for special pressures of all sorts, sometimes for constructive political purposes. I suppose that it is through these voluntary associations that the real political business of the United States is most effectively carried forward. A long time ago, that remarkable Frenchman, de Tocqueville, came to the United States and wrote a wonderful book of observations about the ways in which the American political system operated. And I always liked this, which he had to say about the propensity of Americans, the tendency of Americans to form voluntary associations for their interests. These Americans, he said, are the most peculiar people in the world. You'll not believe it when I tell you how they behave. In a local community, a citizen may conceive of some need which is not being met. What does he do? He goes across the street and discusses it with his neighbor. Then what happens? A committee comes into existence. Then the committee begins functioning on behalf of that need. And you won't believe this, but it's true. All of this is done without reference to any bureaucrat. All of this is done by the private citizens on their own initiative. Well, this kind of formation of committees, this kind of joining together of the hands of citizens in groups and organizations of all kinds, is a part of the freedom which is guaranteed by the First Amendment. And it is a freedom which has served to strengthen the United States in immeasurable ways. It's quite possible to make fun of the American tendency to form committees. And some of our committee making is no doubt funny. And some of the jokes about the inefficiency and the silliness of committees are altogether valid. But don't you forget this, that groups and organizations like the group that is sitting in this room today have been the real motive force of American life, have provided the stimulation by which this country has met its problems and licked them. Out of the freedom of Americans to join hands, to take common counsel, to act in unison to meet their problems, has come the great growth of the American community. And nothing, I think, has done so much to build a nation and to make that nation secure as this freedom of association, which is one of the vital elements of American life and one of the vital liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. How are the civil liberties of Americans to be preserved and kept alive and kept useful? They depend, of course, upon a tolerance among Americans for ideas with which they disagree. A tolerance for ideas which they may consider wrong, which they may even consider dangerous, which they may indeed regard as disloyal. The political scientists speak of the United States in a somewhat lofty term as a pluralistic society. And that means simply that it is a society which has a tolerance for many kinds of individual and group activity, which has a tolerance for many differences, which encourages a great variety of interests and satisfactions, of ways of worship, of ways of business, of ways of enjoyment. Ours is a pluralistic society because it has always permitted a great variety of cultural and economic and intellectual pursuits. Well, it can remain that kind of society only if all of us, only if all the people who call themselves Americans will maintain a tolerance for that kind of variety. A tolerance for ideas, for ways of doing things, for interests which are different from their own. That isn't always easy to do. In times of national excitement, in times of national stress, in a time like the present, when we feel with a good deal of justification that our nation and all that we believe in are threatened from the outside, are threatened by an aggressive communist dictatorship. It isn't easy in such a time to remember that diversity, that ideas that we dislike and indeed consider disloyal, are nevertheless a source of strength, and that if we are to maintain our strength, our unity as a people, we must permit those ideas to have expression.